Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, COVID-19 isn't going away anytime soon, but some restrictions will be lifted for Boulder County residents later this week. Health officials say they're feeling comfortable with the safer-at-home phase of the pandemic that begins on Saturday. We'll have more coming up after headlines. Then, with COVID-19 specifically impacting the lungs, we're going to check in with the local representative of the American Lung Association on our lung health, given that we are living in a part of the country that has very consistently degraded air quality. Two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You, followed by Naturally. Then after headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, we're going to broadcast a panel discussion that took place online yesterday. It was hosted by the CU Boulder, Colorado European Union Centre of Excellence, and it's on a climate change and energy sustainability, lessons to be learned from the COVID-19 pandemic. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sidler.
Most of the metro area will join Denver in allowing stay-at-home orders to expire on Friday. Adams, Arapaho, Boulder, Broomfield, and Jefferson counties will begin to follow Governor Jared Polis's statewide safer-at-home approach. Yesterday, Denver Mayor Michael Hancock held a news conference detailing the path forward, saying that businesses can begin to reopen this Saturday. Mayor Hancock said that while many places will be able to open this weekend, several will still be subject to closure.
These include restaurants and bars, except for curbside pickup and delivery, movie theaters, live performance theaters and concert venues, stadiums and arenas, gyms and yoga and fitness studios, with very limited exceptions. Those stores on the inside of malls that don't have outdoor public entrances and exits. Outdoor recreation facilities such as children's playgrounds and tennis and basketball courts. And city recreation center and libraries. As per state's order, large gatherings above or more than 10 people will still be prohibited through May 26th.
Hancock said that there's no schedule currently for restaurants and bars to reopen. The Denver Post reports that restaurant owners have expressed uncertainty about reopening at half capacity or at all this month, citing worker health and safety as their top concerns. Starting today in Denver, all customers at grocery stores will be required to wear masks. Boulder County officials believe that enough progress has been made in response to COVID-19 to the point that the county can transition to the safer at home standards on Saturday. The Boulder City Council discussed the new phase of the response to the virus, and we'll have more on that after headlines. Last night, the Longmont City Council voted to give preliminary approval to an ordinance that would give the city manager authority to require people to wear face masks or other protective gear during an emergency such as COVID-19 pandemic. The city manager would have the authority to exceed orders such as that by the Boulder County Board of Health, which requires anyone older than 12 to wear masks when in public and social distancing cannot be maintained. The only no vote against the measure was cast by Mayor Brian Bagley. The Times Call reports that Bagley expressed frustration with what he claims is a lack of data and conflicted advice from health experts. Other council members noted that while restrictions aren't easy, wearing facial coverings can prevent inundating hospitals with people who have caught the virus from someone not wearing a mask. The Longmont ordinance will now be scheduled for a public hearing and final action on May 19th. Workers at Denver Health are recruiting fellow employees to form a union in order to obtain better benefits and workplace conditions. According to a statement from the Communications Workers of America, the movement to unionize has dozens of nurses and bedside employees already on board. The Denverite reports that hospital workers at Denver Health have been energized by unpaid leave and the lack of protective equipment, which has caused unsafe conditions. Workers have also been sparked by the revelation that executives were getting large bonuses during this COVID-19 time. Members of the movement to unionize are remaining anonymous for now because they don't want to risk losing any hours, but they do plan to go public in about 2 weeks. Crews from the city of Denver are returning this week to areas in the Five Points neighborhood where cleanups were conducted last week. The Denverite reports that a spokesperson for the city said that the earlier effort removed a significant amount of trash, even though officials did not require people to move, only asking them to do so voluntarily. This time, the city will require people to move themselves and any of their belongings out of the area being cleaned. The city spokesperson said that notices were posted yesterday for the cleanup that is set to start tomorrow. She added that they will have outreach teams on site to connect people to resources and services. Last week, advocates for people experiencing homelessness said that the cleanups endanger health under guidance from the Centers for Disease Control, and they can scatter people, which can cause them to lose touch with service providers. On Tuesday, the Colorado Supreme Court ordered that no juries will be assembled before July 6th for safety and health concerns. The order said that until further action by the Chief Justice, state courts are to continue to operate on an emergency basis. Some of the functions that will continue are those essential for public safety, health, and welfare, including matters such as domestic abuse civil protection orders and child dependency neglect cases. In other action yesterday, the state high court removed another Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate from the June primary ballot. The Colorado Supreme Court ruled that Lorena Garcia, a community organizer, will not be allowed to participate because she did not collect enough signatures to get on the ballot. The court overturned the decision of a trial judge who said that the coronavirus had created an impossible burden for signature collection. The Supreme Court ruled that the judicial branch does not have the authority to rewrite the election code. The Colorado Sun reports that Garcia is vowing to challenge that ruling in federal court. The decision to take Garcia off the ballot comes a day after the Supreme Court removed nonprofit leader Michelle Farina Warren from the ballot for failing to collect enough signatures. Today's weather will see increasing clouds with a high near 73. Tomorrow will be sunny with a high about 63 and windy with gusts up to 38 miles per hour. Right now it's about 48 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. As Boulder County prepares to transition into Colorado's Safer at Home order this Saturday, public health officials presented some positive data on the local COVID-19 situation to Boulder City Council last night. KGNU's Ros Brown has more.
Boulder residents have been on lockdown due to COVID-19 since March 24th. But starting at midnight this Friday, Boulder County will allow its extension of the stay-at-home order to expire. Jeff Syak with the County Health Department told City Council face masks will still be required in public for anyone over the age of 12 where social distancing of 6 feet cannot be maintained. He reminded residents that droplet transmission of the coronavirus is possible when a person is in close contact with someone who has respiratory symptoms.
Again, just the purpose of the mask is for me to protect you and you to protect me. So I wear the mask to protect you by stopping the spread of those droplets, and you wear the mask to protect me. So there's been a lot of supportive messaging around. We are in this together. We can make a difference.
In addition to a face covering, starting Saturday, we're still being asked to limit social interactions as much as possible and continue social distancing. Zayak warned that's likely to last quite a while.
Where we are right now with our order in place is roughly around 75% effectiveness around social distancing. And when the governor moved to Safer at Home, he has been sharing that that's more like a 60 to 65% social distancing effectiveness. And we know from the modeling that we can't drop below 55%. And that's why until we have our vaccine in place or some kind of treatment, we are going to be in the social distancing space for quite some time moving forward.
Zayak said more than 400 local businesses have participated through the Chamber of Commerce to safely open or open for curbside pickup this Saturday. He added that his agency has heard from people who said the county didn't do enough and those who feel it went too far. One of those is Air Force veteran Ken Fenton. During public comment by phone last night, Fenton told council he believes Americans were forced to trade their freedom for safety.
I would like to use my time to tell you that government restrictions in response to COVID-19 are immoral and should be ended immediately. Generations of my fellow soldiers, sailors, and airmen risked their lives for freedom, not for a society shackled by the edicts of local and state governments as we see today. While it was noble in one respect to attempt to save our neighbors' lives, we forgot that their life is theirs to decide what to do with, not ours. It is time for this great city to lead by example and remove all the restrictions placed on private businesses and individuals in response to COVID-19.
As of Tuesday, 44 county residents had died from COVID-19, but currently hospitalizations remain stable, according to Robert Vissers with Boulder Community Health. He says nearly 700 people have tested positive for the virus and 132 have been hospitalized. He added that 113 cases have been among those between the ages of 20 and 29.
So despite having a significant number of 20 to 29-year-olds infected in Boulder County, we have not admitted anybody under 30 years of age. And the majority of our admissions still are 60 to 90 plus. And in terms of our mortality, we had one patient between 60 and 69. The others were between 70 and 95.
Visser said testing has expanded and will soon expand more.
Starting this Thursday, we will be offering drive-through testing both on our campus here in Boulder and then out in Erie. We anticipate as of Thursday, we'll be able to do 100 tests per day. And we think probably by next week, we'll be able to accelerate up to 200 tests per day. This will be expanded to patients who are symptomatic and who talk to their provider, and the provider feels that they would be beneficial in getting a test. But again, anyone who has some symptoms, you don't necessarily need to be sick enough to come to the hospital or go to the emergency department. But if you have some symptoms and you're concerned that you might have coronavirus, then please contact a provider or go to our website, and there's a link that will get you to a provider that can screen you.
For more information on the county's new COVID-19 rules and guidelines that start May 9th, go to bouldercounty.org. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
Well, COVID-19, the lung disease that is caused by the novel coronavirus, is a virus and a disease that's primarily attacking the lungs, and for the American Lung Association, this has been something that they have been dreading. And of course, they have been advocating for better lung health, whether that is advocating for better air quality or for rules around smoking and nicotine consumption. KGNU's Richard Kiefer caught up with the local chapter of the American Lung Association to find out more.
My name is Joanna Strether, and I am a Senior Director of Advocacy for the American Lung Association in Colorado.
At this point in time, for an organization like the American Lung Association, a respiratory pandemic is probably your worst nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Our mission is to fight lung disease, improve lung health. And so certainly this pandemic certainly raises to the occasion, which the American Lung Association's mission is to keep people's lungs healthy and certainly keep them aware of what COVID-19 can do.
Could you explain that a little bit? What, from your perspective, is the issue in terms of lung health regarding COVID-19? What are you seeing at this point?
Yeah, well, it's important to prevent getting COVID-19 in the first place, but it's also essential that we do all we can to keep our lungs healthy to avoid the worst effects of the disease. You know, it's hard to say who gets the disease and how bad it will be. We're all vulnerable. And then most recently, the CDC has also identified smokers as a group of people at high risk for severe illness if they contact the disease. A recent study published by the New England Journal of Medicine found that people who smoke were 2.4 times more likely to have severe symptoms from COVID-19 compared to those who did not smoke. So certainly, as the American Lung Association and a champion for lung health, we're wanting to make awareness to this and letting people know that, you know, if they are interested in quitting, the American Lung Association has a variety of resources to help people in this time.
But in a general sense, I think, is the American Lung Association's position that if you have any lung type of problem, from asthma to smoking to vaping or whatever, you're more susceptible to the virus, to the coronavirus? Is that pretty much your position?
Yeah, it would be reasonable to think that any condition that potentially affects the lungs, be it chronic or acute effects from such behaviors like smoking or already having asthma, COPD, definitely this could play a role in making someone more susceptible to complications from the disease.
What about air pollution? If there's an air pollution alert, for example, is that a risk factor then as well?
Yeah, so studies are also showing that air pollution exposure is linked to a greater risk of respiratory infection. There's also some very early evidence suggests that exposure to air pollution may make people more vulnerable to COVID-19 infection.
Specifically regarding vaping, is vaping, for example, a high risk factor, or is it any worse than smoking? What's the story on vaping in relation to susceptibility to COVID?
Yeah, so the CDC has just identified smokers and vapers as a group of people at higher risk for severe illness if they contract the disease. We know that there's about 5.1 million kids nationwide using e-cigarettes. Actually, Colorado has above the average, about 26% of high school students vape. Extremely concerning. It does have a direct impact on our lungs, much like smoking does. And so we've been for years now trying to create awareness that vaping is not safer than smoking. And so we really want kids, their parents, to definitely listen to that message. We've been trying to, with our advocacy efforts, raise the sales age of tobacco products to 21. It is federally now. Now going state by state and sort of codifying language is really important. But making sure that these products get out of the hands of our youth. We know the tobacco industry directly markets to them with their enticing flavors. So definitely the Lung Association is very concerned about the rate at which kids use e-cigarettes.
So what's the general demographic for vaping? Is it mostly like under age 20?
Yes, we've seen statistics now that even middle schoolers, are starting to vape. One in four high school students also vape. So very alarming numbers. We had been doing so well in creating a message about smoking cigarettes, and we really saw a decrease in consumption of cigarettes with adults, but also in our youth, but now only to have a newer product on the market that's directly targeting our youth, especially with all those enticing flavors.
So is vaping itself on the rise?
Oh, absolutely. It is definitely on the rise. It has been growing at an exponential amount, even doubling year over year within our young high school youth population.
Does the American Lung Association have any insight as to the motivation for vaping on the part of young people? I mean, middle school is pretty young. I mean, is this a social phenomenon? What is the motivation? Any idea?
Yeah, it definitely is social. Again, it's marketed as it's healthier. It's separate from regular combustible cigarettes. It has all these flavors. It's helped people to quit smoking, but really it's one and the same. You're getting the same chemicals through the same products. They just look different. Also with vaping, you know, it's students do it at school, in school. We've had high schools report that this is their number one problem is kids vaping, and it's taking so much of their time and administration time away from instructing in the classroom because now they have to deal with kids who continue to vape at school and what that punishment might look like. And so really has taken schools, you know, for a loop on how to really combat this new product. I think that it's just enticing to kids. It comes in a million different flavors, which also the American Lung Association is trying to work at restricting. We know that the flavors are what makes them so popular and enticing, and if we could restrict those flavors. But if we could do that, we know that the kids would not be as attracted. There's no incentive, you know, we believe, to vape something that doesn't taste good to them. And so we know that if we could curb that and restrict some of those flavors, we hope to see less kids vaping and becoming addicted.
Yeah, this is reminiscent of the original claims of smoking itself not being harmful way back in the 70s, 60s, 70s, and so on.
Yeah.
Is that more or less where we're at with vaping right now?
Yeah, it's going to have to be a whole new educational market. You know, these things come also in, you know, they don't look like a conventional cigarette. A lot of the products that the kids use, especially the Juul, they look like thumb drives. They're easy to hide from their parents, their teachers. Some look like lipsticks. Some look like makeup compacts. And so they're disguisable, and so it's easy to use the vape anywhere. And it also doesn't smell like conventional combustible cigarette smoking. Certainly awareness campaigns like we've been doing. We have the vape talk for parents if they want to go online and really get educated about what these products are, what they look like, what they can do, so that they know what their kids are doing. And also we have lots of help for schools so that schools can implement programs, whether to help kids quit for good. You know, we want to put those measures in place and kind of attack it from all areas, if you will.
Yeah, and this information that you provide is on your website. Do you just want to tell us what that is?
Yes. Parents, teachers, many resources, even people who want to quit smoking can visit us at lung.org for lots of different resources to help people quit smoking, to educate parents about vaping, even stuff for teachers and school administrators.
Do adults vape?
Yeah, absolutely. Adults are vaping. They are switching to a different product, especially as there are other laws in place, no smoking inside restaurants now and so forth.
Can you vape in a restaurant?
Right now, you cannot vape inside restaurants. They've been in some states. It really honestly depends on where you are. Even different city ordinances, we're definitely working to add e-cigarettes to no smoking indoor legislation and laws and state statutes. We've been trying to do that for many years now because we want to protect people. We also know that there is emissions from vaping. And so what does that do to the person next to you and secondhand smoke or emissions due to the person next to you and the impact it has on their lungs?
Joanna Strother of the American Lung Association of Colorado, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
For KGNU, I'm Richard Kiefer.
And it's time now for Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. I think it was Will Rogers who said, if you give money to the poor, the rich will get it soon enough, but at least the poor will get to use it to buy something they need first. Much of the trillions already spent on pandemic recovery have gone straight to the rich, though, supporting large corporations and the Trump family. As the Washington Post wrote, quote, as the dust settles on the $2.2 trillion legislation, it has become clear that one of its largest provisions, a $170 billion tax giveaway, appears to be tailor-made for the benefit of wealthy real estate investors, such as President Trump and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who is running one of Trump's coronavirus task forces, close quote. Some of the biggest banks prioritize the applications of their wealthiest customers. Loans of over $1 million made up just 4% of those approved, but they sucked up 45% of the dollars disbursed. In the next coronavirus bill, here are some possible ways to help people who most desperately need it. In the next coronavirus bill, here are some possible ways to help people who most desperately need it, starting with increases in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program minimum benefit to $30 a month and the maximum benefit amount by 15%, as well as suspension of all rules that would end or cut benefits. 84% of all SNAP benefits go to households with children, the elderly, or persons with disabilities. SNAP recipients are racially diverse, many have earned income, and most SNAP households do not receive cash welfare benefits. We can also dedicate some funds for homeless youth, including emergency shelters, transitional living programs, rental assistance, street outreach, and a 6-month cessation on aging out of the foster system, with protections against discrimination for LGBTQ youth. 1 in 10 young adults ages 18 to 25, and at least 1 in 30 adolescents ages 13 to 17, experience homelessness unaccompanied by a parent. We can authorize funding of virtual visits under the Maternal, Infant, and Early Childhood Home Visiting Program so that households at risk for substance abuse and domestic violence stay connected to support resources. There's a mental health crisis fueled by uncertainty over the disease's spread, record-breaking unemployment, and intense loneliness. As Child Trends reports, research shows that during times of crisis, there are increases in substance abuse, child abuse, and intimate partner violence. Finally, we can increase funding for Medicaid, entailing the extension of Medicaid coverage for pregnant and postpartum women to provide them with accurate information on the pandemic and their rights, continue coverage past 60 days postpartum, and increase access to pre- and postnatal mental health services, as well as home and community-based services, to ensure the elderly and people with disabilities can remain in their homes and communities. If you have thoughts on pandemic spending for those who most desperately need it, you can contact your senators and representatives. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
You can hear Make Them Hear You every Wednesday morning right here at Community Radio KGNU. And it's time now for Naturally.
Greetings, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. I wanted to share a little bit about how we might take care of our eyes because, you know, when you have vision problems and it becomes difficult to read or enjoy a movie or recognize your loved ones, it makes life not so much fun. And it's amazing how much time we'll spend doing exercises for our thighs and butts and biceps and all that. But what do we do to help keep our eyes strong and healthy? Well, rather than thinking that our eyes are a separate entity, it's good to look at that our eyes are often nourished by the health of our liver, as well as the other organs in our body, but especially the liver. We do know in Western medicine that if someone has jaundice or hepatitis, that sometimes it shows up as yellow coloring in the eyes. So if you're experiencing vision problems, think about how you can be more supportive to the liver. The liver loves it when we eat sour foods like lemon, berries. It also likes it when we eat greens. So greens could be dandelion greens, kale, collard greens. But some of my favorite eye foods are blueberries. During World War II, Air Force pilots were given a ration of bilberry jam. And bilberry jam is really just a European blueberry. It's blue inside. But we can do ourselves a service by using blueberries in our smoothies, fruit salad, eating a bowl of blueberries with some hazelnut milk or oat milk. Get to know the blueberries. They're awesome. Another great eye food is goji berries. Goji berries, also known as lycee berries, are in the nightshade family. So they're a relative of tomato, but they're very tiny. So one of my favorite breakfasts is to soak chia seeds and add goji berries and blueberries. And another good eye food, raw sunflower seeds. It would make sense that sunflowers are good for the eyes because the sunflower grows during the hottest part of the summer, and very often, especially young sunflowers, they will turn and face the sunrise and then turn and face the sunset. They're said to be heliotropic. They follow the sun. We want to protect our vision, and it's worth putting effort into it. Be careful of the things that undermine our liver health, fried foods, chips, because our eyes are said to be the windows to the soul. They're part of our beauty, part of our insight. So thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.